3 a.m. Powerful security lights lit up the towers and gables of the Kremlin. The temperature was 5 below, but the sky was clear. Suddenly the silence was shattered by the roar of engines as two vans marked with the yellow and black international biohazard symbol drove out, going dangerously fast. Tony was at the wheel of the lead vehicle. With her were three men trained in decontamination. The second vehicle was a mobile isolation unit with a paramedic at the wheel and a doctor, Ruth Solomons, in the passenger seat. Tony powered through bends, afraid she might be wrong, but terrified she might be right. She could hardly bear think of the consequences if the Madoba 2 virus had somehow escaped. It was highly infectious, spreading quickly through coughs and sneezes, and it was fatal. It took only 20 minutes to reach Michael Ross's isolated cottage. The place was dark as Tony stopped next to a Volkswagen Golf, presumably Michael's. She turned off the engine and sounded her horn long and loud. Nothing. Silence. No lights came on, no one opened a door. "Bunny suits, please, gentlemen." They all climbed into heavy plastic orange spacesuits. They were completely sealed, and the wearer breathed through an air filter with an electric fan powered by a battery pack worn on the suit belt. A headset in the helmet enabled them to speak to one another and to the Kremlin switchboard. "Right, I'll go first." Walking stiffly in the clumsy suit, Tony went to the front door and banged the knocker. Then she went around to the back, where there was a neat garden with a wooden shed. The back door was unlocked, and she went through the house turning on lights. She spoke to the others over the headset. "No one home." Then why had he left his house unlocked? She went out into the garden. The garden shed, too, was unlocked. When she opened the door, it smelled like a slaughterhouse. "Oh, my God." The doctor heard her. "What is it?" "Come quickly, Ruth, the shed." Tony fumbled in the dark and found the light switch. Michael Ross lay on the floor, face up, bleeding from every orifice. Eyes, nose, mouth, ears. Blood pooled around him on the wooden floor. He was suffering from a massive multiple hemorrhage, a classic symptom of Madoba 2. And he was very dangerous, his body an unexploded bomb full of the deadly virus. But he was alive. A weak bubbling sound came from his mouth. Tony bent down. "Michael!" she shouted through her helmet. "It's Tony Gallo from the lab!" There was a flicker of intelligence in his bloody eyes. He mumbled something. "What?"
"No cure."
Then he vomited. A jet of black fluid exploded from his mouth, splashing her faceplate. She jerked back, even though she knew she was protected by the suit. Then she was pushed aside by Dr. Solomons. "Isolation stretcher, quick as you can." She opened her medical case, took out a syringe loaded with morphine and a blood coagulant. She pushed the needle into Michael's neck and depressed the plunger. "Okay, get him out of here." Two paramedics carried Michael out to a trolley enclosed in a transparent plastic tent. They slid their patient through a porthole in one end of the tent, then sealed it. But before getting into the ambulance, they had to decontaminate themselves and the stretcher. Ruth Solomons and the paramedics took it in turns to stand in a shallow plastic tub like a child's paddling pool and be sprayed with a powerful disinfectant. Then they loaded the stretcher into the ambulance, slammed the doors, and roared off into the night. Now there was work to be done. "Let's clean up," said Tony. One of the men began to run yellow tape reading "Biohazard, do not cross line" around the entire property. Luckily, there were no other houses nearby. If Michael had lived in a block of flats with communal air vents, it would already have been too late for decontamination. The others got out rolls of garbage bags and garden sprayers filled with disinfectant. Every surface had to be sprayed and wiped down. Possessions would be sealed in plastic drums and taken to the Kremlin to be sterilised by high-pressure steam or destroyed in the medical incinerator. While the men cleaned up, Tony looked around. In the shed, there was a glass case with an air extractor. In it was a dead rabbit. From the laboratory? Beside it was a water bowl labelled Joe. Michael had given this creature an identity. That was significant. Laboratory staff rarely named the experimental animals, animals that were going to get killed. But Michael treated this one as a pet. She went outside as a police car drew up. She'd been expecting them. The security guards at the Kremlin had phoned Inverburn Police Headquarters to notify them of a red alert. Until 2 years before, Tony had been a police officer herself, a golden girl. Rapid promotion and tipped to be Scotland's first woman chief constable. But she'd clashed with her boss over what she believed to be racism in the force. Their row had been leaked to a newspaper and she'd been forced to resign. At that time, she'd been living with another detective, Frank Hackett, but when she fell out of favour, he'd left her.